Welcome back to your Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where Hebrews from all over the world gather to share and listen about the biblical roots of our faith. Sit back with your favorite morning brew and join the conversation. Lines are now open, so call 503-967-3001. 503-967-3001. His kingdom, his people, and your radio station.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You're on with the wise guys, and guess what? We've got a fourth wise guy with us. He's pretty awesome. You know, we've had him on this show before, and he adds a lot of insight and to questions that come up within Hebrew fellowships, Messianic fellowships, and I've grown to appreciate his comments because they're usually ones that ask questions, which I think we should be doing in every part of life. Why does this happen? Why are we looking at this?
Why am I awake at this time?
Yeah, right. Why is it cold in the month of June? Anyways.
Come on.
We have Avi Ben Mordecai with us here this morning. He's the author of Galatians, a Hebrew commentary from a Torah perspective, and it's been a wonderful book over the years. Mm-hmm. I've used that as a reference book for myself. It breaks down the verses of Galatians, and it looks at it from all perspectives and all sides, and that's why I like it. You know, have you guys read that book? Yeah, it's been amazing for me. I keep it on my shelf all the time whenever I'm studying Galatians, and I look through it. It's awesome. Avi comes to us. He lives all the way in Australia, but he's up here in the Northwest right now, and he's visiting with family, and it's great to have him. Good morning, Avi Ben Mordecai. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Roland, good morning, wise guys. I hope you all are doing well this morning.
We are.
All fully vertical, so you know that's good.
Well, I that's what I do. I go vertical. That's the way to do it, you know.
Walk on 2 feet, not four, right? Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
I love the way you put it. That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, anyways, you guys, let me set this backdrop just a little bit. Avi has been studying the Zadok calendar, and he's been doing that for almost close to 2 years now. And if you listen to his podcast on Hebrew Nation Radio, you're going to find out a series that he's put on. I think, Avi, what did you have, like 20 to 22 podcasts put out?
Well, yeah. Actually, I think I'm on part 22 now. I'm just wrapping it up on this particular aspect of it, but look, I want to make it really clear to all of your listeners here that I'm not an expert in this, okay? But not by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are people, guys, that have been studying this material academically and otherwise for decades. Many, many people out there have. I've read some of their material. I mean, I'm just a newbie to this stuff. I'm just, you know, a couple of years into this. But the material that I'm noticing is striking. It just comes out and jumps right off the page. And I please understand, and I want all of your listeners to understand that I spent the better part of almost 30 years, actually 28 years, following the Psychic Moon calendar, the rabbinic Talmudic calendar, this calendar, that calendar. I mean, I've done a lot of different things over 28 years, and you know, it got to a point where I said, "Does anybody know what's going on here? What calendar are we supposed to be on?"
Right.
And many, many congregational leaders know that this can be a very divisive point.
Right.
And ultimately, what happened with me, and I just want to stress this as kind of a preamble before I jump into any questions here, is that my wife was listening to something that the late Michael Heiser had been commenting on a couple of years ago. He was just mentioning something, just really in passing, on dealing with the fact that the Book of Daniel and the Book of Revelation, I mean, two different eras of time, that both of them are very specifically mentioning a 30-day calendar, a 30-day month calendar. And both of them were, and all of the numbers match.
Hmm.
And when my wife pointed that out to me, I kind of looked at that and I said, wait a minute, what did you say? what's this? So I kind of went into that and took a look at that. And I had had many, many people over the years try to convince me of lunar Sabbatarians, daylight Sabbatarians. You only keep Sabbath sunrise to sunset, summer sunset to sunset. I mean, there's so many different things going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of threw it behind the, you know, kind of relegated it to the back shelf and thought, nah, you know, I just don't want to confuse myself with too much of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really a couple of years ago, gentlemen, that really I looked at this and I listened to what Heiser was talking about, the late Michael Heiser, who just passed from us recently here.
Yes.
And Michael had spoken about these things, and so it really got my attention this time.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to my wife, look, I think what we need to do is, if we're going to study this calendar, then we've got to just jump in and do it, because how can I test it unless I do it?
Right.
I mean,
true.
That's kind of how I feel.
Right.
I mean, I rather than just standing on the sidelines and looking at it and saying, well, you know, okay, whatever, and arguing about it, I'll just do it. I'll try it. I'll see and test it with scripture. And the more that I did, the more that I jumped into this, and the more I started doing this with my wife, I started saying, wow, well, wait a minute. This is really interesting. And one thing to another. And finally, before you know it, I'm sitting here with scripture in my hand, and I'm saying, this makes just a lot of sense. It just
mm-hmm.
really makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I moved further into it, I stopped and I just said, okay, well, if we're going to really, really understand this, I don't care. And this is a really important point, if I can please make this.
Yes.
I don't care what the Book of Jubilees says, or the Book of Enoch, or the apocryphal works, or this work or that. I really don't care. It's not. I mean, it's interesting stuff, but it's not driving my understanding of things
uh-huh.
necessarily.
Uh-huh.
I said, what I think we need to do is we just need to go right into the New Testament, the Brit Hadashah writings,
uh-huh.
and let's look there and see if we can find it. Because
right.
if it's there, if Yeshua did it, if Paul did it, if his disciples did it, then there's got to be something to it.
Correct.
And that is precisely what I did. So that is why there are now 22 episodes of this on my podcasts, because I couldn't stop. I just kept saying, okay, let's find more of it. And this stuff is all over the place, Roland. This guy
yeah.
is all over the place, guys. It's
yeah.
You can't get away from it. That's all I was saying. Okay.
You know, I just want to ditto you with that, because for those of us that have followed the Hebrew way of thinking for a while, or Messianic, we all know how many calendars are out there, and it usually has been frustrating. It's one of the reasons, like for me, I quit caring about them a while back, because I was going, what does this really have to do with the gospel message? What does it really have to do with anything?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking, okay, everyone's arguing about this and they're arguing about that. And you know how human nature is. Once you pick one, you've considered that to be now the authority.
You're going to defend it with everything you've got.
Yeah, I'm going to defend it because I worked hard on this thing and I don't want to change. You know, if I change, that means I got to work at this harder, and it's, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I think what struck me about your viewpoint, and again, mm-hmm. I want to state to everyone, this isn't Avi's Zadok calendar. This isn't Avi's this is Avi trying to research this calendar. And when you present it to us, it was the first time I actually got to see Messiah within the calendar. It started to make sense to me, which was that question of why is he here? How did he, you know, meet with his apostles? I mean, does this have anything to do with his return? Those things came to light, and that perked my interest. That's all I'll say.
Well, if I may, do I have a moment here to interrupt you just for a moment here?
Do it.
Okay. Gentlemen, here's kind of what I want to say here at the very outset of this whole thing that we're looking at, that this calendar, as I said, this appears to me to be the calendar that Yeshua, Paul, all of the disciples that they were going by. I mean, this just clearly to me appears that way. Mm-hmm. Now, there will be people who will say, well, you know, what about other calendars? What about this or that? I'm not looking at other calendars. I've already done that, been there, done that. I don't want to do that anymore. Hmm. What I'm trying to understand is if, in fact, this is the calendar they were following, which to me, again, it appears that way, then I'm going to ask a very simple question to the entire Messianic body, and I'm going to say, if they were doing that, then why are we on a different calendar? Why are we doing rabbinic calendars? Why are we doing this or that? What's the point in that if the Brit Hadashah shows this one? That's all I'm asking. Okay. And I'm not asking everybody to go pull out their Book of Jubilees or their Book of Enoch or whatever whatever book that. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I'm asking the question, okay, if Yeshua did this, what are you doing and why?
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be based on a number of different things. And I'm happy to go into a few things here. We're not going to go into a long dissertation on this thing from this radio show, but we can look at a few things and we can look and say, okay, yeah. And you've had a few people in your congregational purview that have looked at these things and have asked a lot of questions. Good questions, mind you.
Yes.
They're fair questions. But I'm not coming across as some, dare I say it, a Michael Heiser, academic scholar. I'm not. I don't have any PhD behind my name. I don't have an MA. I'm not a master's of theology. No, I'm just an average bloke. I'm an average guy, okay?
Stop it.
And I'm looking at stuff.
Pretty good average, dude. Yeah, a little higher than average because you study a little more than average
whatever.
Guy.
But
yes.
Yeah,
get your point.
I understand it. Okay, you get my point. All I'm saying is, look, I'm just looking at an average kind of guy, and I'm just saying, okay, look, if this says this, that says that, what are we doing? That's all I'm asking. It's just simple questions, and that's my Jewish background. I just ask questions, okay? Let's get some answers here. That's all.
That is. Okay, so, Avi, what I'd like to do here, the first part of this show, is actually get to you and say, you know, what are some concise summaries of how you see this calendar coming up within the New Testament and also what perked your interest even in the prophets. I think those from the book of Isaiah that you're looking at. And then later on, we have some questions that have come up from different people, and we're going to throw those questions at you. And we're not looking for huge scholarly answers, but your gut response, you know, and I think – and we've looked over them this morning, and I've seen them in the morning time now. I actually am thinking a little bit more clearer than at night when I received them. And I'm going, okay, I can give some gut responses to all of these too. But let's take it from the start. Aaron has a question here for you, though, before we get started.
Well, I think, would it be a good idea to kind of have a real brief overlook of what is this calendar versus some of the other calendars that we know of? Because when I first heard about this, I can't remember when it was, months ago, I was like, I've never even heard of that one.
Mm-hmm.
And so why is that one different than, you know, the Gregorian that we know, that we, you know, schedule our appointments on?
Yeah,
Oh yeah.
I mean, obviously, I think we'll cover that. I think as soon as we hit Isaiah and some of these other things too, that's a great question.
Well, let us.
Yeah, just start in. How did you get here, and what caused you to look at this?
Okay. Well, first of all, I am going to say I don't want to be too repetitious here. Let me just simply say that, what really got me going on this was just a very brief in passing comment that the academic scholar Michael Heiser had spoken about, who's now passed with us. He's gone on to be with the Almighty, but his work remains, and it was really his work in a very loose way that got me to thinking about this stuff. Mm-hmm. Because I asked the question, wait a minute, if the book of Daniel in their numbers, Daniel chapter 12, and the book of Revelation and all of those numbers there of the timing of those calendars, like 3.5 years, 42 months, and then even going back into Genesis with 150 days for the flood, et cetera, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at those numbers, they're all based on 30-day months, not 29 and a half days, not 31, not 28.2, no, 30 days. That's a month. That's how they understood time. And they all match from Tanakh, from Hebrew scripture days, to the days of Yeshua. They match. All those numbers are exact. And they are all exactly, they're so precision oriented, it just blew my mind. And I said, how did we miss this? Obviously, because these are two different time periods. They're two different eras, epochs of time, but yet they're all matching. So I'm saying, okay, so
sound good. Yeah, see.
Hang on just a minute, guys. We're going to have to call Avi back and see if we can pick him up. I'm going to have to send him in. Okay, let's see if we can get back on here. You know, so what I'm hearing right off the bat, you guys, is that simple math, I think, is where he first started.
Yeah, and that's always one thing that I've always had a question about with the Gregorian calendar. Especially when you think about, Yahweh creating time. I mean, he's the one who set days into motion and how long they were, the sun rises and the sun sets and the moon comes up and, all of that. So that's really what time is. We just have come up with means of trying to keep track of it, right?
Okay, gentlemen.
Yeah. Let's see.
There we go.
See if we got you back.
Okay, we're back.
That's okay, that whole timing thing is where I was like, I don't get this. So I was really excited that, this is kind of where you're starting.
So I think, what I want to do is let's take our listeners just to the very foundation here, okay? I want to bring us over here to the prophet Yehezkiel or Ezekiel, okay? And I want to go to chapter 44. Verse 15. Let's just start there, okay?
Okay.
Now, you guys have the biblical text in front of you. Rollin, you guys, you wise guys, go ahead. You read it. I don't want to read it. You read it. I mean, I'm using the New King James Version. You can use whatever version you want. It's all pretty much going to say about the same thing. You start, just read verse 15.
Okay. But the Levitical priests, the son of Zadok, who kept charge of my sanctuary, when the sons of Israel went astray from me, so come near to me to minister to me, and they shall stay for me to offer me the fat and the blood, declares Yahweh.
Okay, so that's one aspect, and it is in context. It's exactly that. Now, go, just scroll down forward, or go page turn forward to verses 23 and 24. Read those two verses. They're all part of the same context, okay?
Moreover, they shall teach my people the difference between the holy and the profane, and cause them to discern between the unclean and the clean. And in a dispute, they shall take their stand to judge. they shall judge it according to my ordinances. Oh, my word, this is so cool, Avi. Okay, wait a minute, sorry. They shall also keep my laws and my statutes and all my appointed feasts and sanctify my Sabbaths. Oh, my word.
So right there, we have Yahweh's word that this is their job. It doesn't say it's the job of the Talmudic rabbis. It doesn't say it's of anybody else. It says these people had the job that was given to them. Okay, period.
Mm-hmm. Period.
And here you can see clearly it says my statutes and all my appointed feasts. The Hebrew word there is the Moedim. That is the divine meetings. And they're going to hallow my Sabbath. They have charge of that. That's what they were supposed to do.
Wow.
Now, if that's the case, why are we usurping that authority and saying, well, no, it's our job to do it. It's our elders in our Messianic congregation. We're supposed to do it. No, it's this person, that person. No, it doesn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we doing that?
Mm-hmm.
This is their job, and this is an eternal decree of Yah. It's not some future thing. It is what it is. He said their job is to do this. Now, what happened was, and, you know, using your – you were talking to me something about the money note thing. This is something in your work, and I went – and, you know, I haven't forgotten about it. I kept thinking, oh, man, yeah, that makes perfect sense, you know. But this is the money note, dude. This is the key because this is what their job is to do. They're the judges of Deuteronomy chapter 18.
Mm-hmm.
These are the judges of the gospel narratives. These are the judges of heaven and earth. Now, what happened was historically, and we know this historically from the book of Maccabees. We know it from Josephus. We know it from a lot of other writings that have been left to us for the last 20 centuries. We know the Pharisaic authority came along. This was in their infancy, and they were the ones that did a religious coup on the nation of the priests, the sons of Tzedok. They tried to kill them off as much as humanly as possible. They chased them out, and they said, you're not in charge, we are. And that is what led to the party of the Pharisees growing as it did. They took over and took the job, and the priests, the sons of Tzedok, they said, well, wait a minute, but Yah told us this is our job. And the Pharisee party, in their infancy, they basically said, no, it's not your job anymore. It's us. And so they took it over, and when they did that, they killed them off, and that is why we have what is called the Dead Sea Scrolls. They are the writings that the priests left for us to say, we're the ones that are supposed to do all this stuff. And whatever you're seeing over there, that's not right. It's our job. So they did it, and they left the scrolls for us, and we discover it, or I should say, you know, the couple of Arab boys discovered it back in 1948. So it was 2000, almost about 2000 years later. These scrolls are discovered in amphora jars, clay jars, and then it takes another 50 years for the scholars to go and start getting them all put together because they were in fragments, and putting them together, and you're saying, wow, what's this all about? And the scrolls prove exactly what Ezekiel 44:24, what you read, it proves exactly what these guys are saying. Okay.
It was like a second witness is how I looked at it. When I was looking up some of these questions, what are the Dead Sea Scrolls? What are they for? And I think what the Dead Sea Scrolls did to the academia was to prove the reliability of the scripture. Hang tight. We're going to be right back.
Yeah.
Door 1 to Yehuda shall by any means pass from the Torah until all be fulfilled. Whoever therefore shall break or weaken one of the least Torah commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the Malchut HaShamayim. But whoever shall do and teach the commands, the same shall be called great in the Malchut HaShamayim.
You're listening to Hebrew Nation Radio, a division of Torah to the Nations.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You're on with the Wise Guys, and we're here with Avi Ben Mordecai. And if you were just listening to us in the first half hour, we started to open up the scriptures, and we started to look at the book of Ezekiel, chapter 44, and starting to understand, well, who is the Zadok priesthood, and what was their job? And we're going back to these original points is because we're trying to wrap our minds around, well, what is this Zadok calendar? How's it different from other ones? And is it different? Is it something that we should maybe take a closer look at? And Avi Ben Mordecai is here to help us take a closer look at this and maybe digest this a little bit more. And we're happy to have him on with us. So good morning. Welcome back again, Avi, and thanks for staying patiently on with us.
Thank you. You wise. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I was just saying that we left off here, and I just wanted to bring you back to it.
Okay. Well, look. So what we've done is essentially what we've done, guys. I think, if hopefully, is we've tried to set the stage and say, okay, these sons of the Ben Tzedok, the house or the Beit Tzedok, the house of Tzedok, the sons of Tzedok. Or I say Tzedok, but some people just say Zadok or Zadok, which is fine. I don't care. Whatever.
Yes.
But the point is that this line comes down from Aaron, comes down from the brother of Moses, who was Aaron. That's in Scripture. We see that in a number of places. Let's go over here. And now, if you would, please, turn your Scriptures over here to 1 Chronicles 24. One, okay, and this is going to tell us another part of the story. And you know, this is so interesting the way Yah works, because he, you know, it's like a puzzle. He puts these little pieces together, and he says, "Okay, go look for it and stick the puzzle pieces together, and it'll all make sense." Okay.
Okay. So we're on 1 Chronicles 24, verse 1. Now the divisions of the descendants of Aaron were these. The sons of Aaron were Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar.
Right. Keep going. Go to number 2 and 3. Go to verses 2 and 3.
But Nadab and Abihu died before their father and had no sons. So Eleazar and Ithamar served as priests, and David with Zadok, of the sons of Eleazar, and Abimelech of the sons of Ithamar, divided them according to their offices for their ministry.
Okay, so now we have here another piece of the puzzle, and that is that these sons of Tzedok, as we learn about in the book of Ezekiel, these are the Kohanim. They're the true Kohanim, the true priests.
Yes.
They are coming down out of the line of Aaron from his two surviving sons, and that is Eleazar and Ithamar. These are the two sons. The other guys didn't do so well. They were kind of not right, and Yehovah took them, okay?
Right.
Now, if you look in verse 3, I'm sorry, I don't know how else to say. They were
it's the only way to say it, man.
Yeah. Now, in verse 3, King David, or David, when he set up his kingdom, it says here, look at verse 3. He said, with Zadok, the son of the sons of Eleazar, one of the surviving sons of Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that line. And Ahimelech, one of the sons of Itamar. So now these are both the surviving sons of Aaron. They then came, and then there was a division of what we are going to learn in this chapter of 24 divisions. Okay? You there?
Yes, I'm here.
Uh-oh. Okay, just double-checking here. So
yeah, good.
They are of the 24 divisions of this Zadok line, this Tzadok line, this whole thing. Okay?
Yes.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Now, I want you to go forward to the book of Luke, and I want you to look at Luke chapter 1, and let's go over here to verse 5. Okay?
Okay. And do you want me to read that?
There's Luke 1:5. Read this, please. Yep.
Okay, Luke 1:5. In the days of Herod, king of Judea, there was a certain priest by the name Zacharias, of the division of Abiah, and he had a wife from the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth.
Okay, and you can stop there, and you can read this on your own. But now we have another piece of the puzzle. Here we have that the Cohen, Zacharias, he was of the division of Abiah. Now we know that Abiah is one of those divisions set up in Second Chronicles from King David through the line of Zadok. He set that up. Okay.
Okay.
So we know that Jehovah wanted it that way because it was set up that way in Scripture.
Yes.
Now, Abiah is the line of which Zechariah and his wife Elizabeth, Elisheva, both of them came from these divisions, okay?
Okay.
And then you read verse 8. Now you can see it in verse 8. They're both kind of read what it says.
Now it came about while he was performing his priestly service before Yahweh in the appointed order of his division. According to the custom of the priestly office, he was chosen by lot to enter the temple of the Lord and burn incense.
Okay,
so
now we have here.
And nine.
That's correct. So now we have here the another puzzle piece that obviously he was considered righteous and blameless with his wife, which is going to tell us some definitions of what righteous and blameless means. Okay, because they were called that. And these two, he had a son. This Zechariah is of Zadok, obviously. It says so. Now, because of his line, because of Abiah, the division, okay? And we know that this Zechariah was the one who had a son. And now you look over here in 1:18. Go read chapter 1, verse 18, still in the book of Luke.
And Zacharias said to the angel, "How shall I know for certain? For I am an old man, and my wife is advanced in years."
Okay, so we know here that Zechariah, on this context, we know that he had a son, or was going to have a son. Not at this present time, but he was going to have a son. And his name would be named Yochanan, or John.
Mm-hmm.
And he later comes to be John the Immerser, or John the Baptist, if you want to call him that, okay?
Yes.
And he's obviously of the Zadok line. John is. Okay?
Yes.
Because his father was. So now we learn later on, in the text that John the Baptist, or if you will, and Yeshua are cousins. They have some blood connection, which I don't know too much about that. I haven't gone too far into that yet. But there's a blood connection between Yeshua and his cousin, John. Okay? And we know that John is Zadok. We know he's of that line. So obviously Yeshua is doing something in regards to the sons of Zadok. He's going to have some link to that. That's all I'm going to say at that point. Okay?
Okay.
So when you begin looking around and you start understanding what's going on, Yeshua is not going to be following the Pharisaic principle of their religious coup that they did some 175 or so years before he came on the scene, because the Pharisees were the ones that killed off the sons of Zadok as much as humanly as possible. Uh-huh. But there were surviving members of it, obviously, because uh-huh. they left us the Dead Sea Scrolls. Okay.
Yes.
But the point is that this whole thing is surrounding the Beit Tzedok, the house of Tzedok. Everything that Yeshua was teaching, it came down from that line. He had to keep it. That was his calendar. And this is where it all begins.
Yeah, you know, it's I was always drawn by the words of minister to me. Usually Yahweh's asking this of the priesthood.
Yeah.
And boy, I saw it really clear when you showed us the book of Ezekiel again, which is you're to minister to me, do these things for me. And so I saw it again here in Luke where this man, this priest now coming down through this line, John the Baptist's father, is a minister to Yahweh. So I think what you're saying to me is that if Yeshua ministers to us, he is in fact ministering for his father because he says what the father commands me to do, I do. In that aspect, he is a minister. So here's this priest ministering back to the father. So that's how I see your connection with the order of the Zadok priesthood.
That's correct. That's all we're doing now. There's a whole lot more to this, but I'm just giving the basics and saying, okay, let's look at this in a fair manner. Let's look mm-hmm. and not, I don't want to get stuck with all of our old calendar baggage and say, yeah, but, and we're just going on and on with that. Forget it. I want to just understand what's going on here in the text. Okay.
Got it.
Now, with that, I don't know how much more time we have for a moment, because now I would like to take you forward to Paul. I want to show not just Yeshua, who is the cousin of a Tzaddik priest,
mm-hmm.
okay, who is John. I want to go forward and let's go to Paul here, because I want to show you something.
Book of Paul. I'm not playing Book of Paul.
Right. It's Shaul, okay? And let's go over here to chapter 20 of the book of Acts. This is still Luke writing all this stuff. And we're going to go over here to Acts 20, verse 5.
Right. Go to
Acts 20, verse 5?
Yeah, Now, this is the context is about Paul and his companions heading off going over to Troas, which is across it's at Ionian Sea, or something. It's in Greece. It's in that area. There's a whole waterway there, and you got to go over across there to Troas. Okay.
So I'm thinking I should
read five.
I'm thinking I should read 5 and 6 maybe. But these had gone ahead and were waiting for us at Troas, and we sailed from Philippi from the days of unleavened bread, and came to them at Troas within 5 days, and there we stayed 7 days.
Okay, now let's look at this, guys. This is really, really interesting chronology. Okay.
Okay.
So we sailed away from Philippi. They're going to Troas. Okay. They sail away from Philippi. It says after the days of unleavened bread. Okay. So we know based on Leviticus chapter 23 and other places that we know the days of unleavened bread are going to end on the 21st going into the 22nd of the first month. Okay? We know that. I mean, that's in Scripture. 21st, 21, and then on the 22nd, it's over. It's, you know, it's all over, okay?
Okay.
So there's 7 days of unleavened bread. We know that from the text, okay?
Okay.
Are we all with it? We're all on the same page together here so far, right?
Yeah, we're doing good.
Yes.
So, all right. So this is after the days of unleavened bread. He's going to sail. Now, it says here, in 5 days, he joined them at Troas. Now, hold on here. If the days of unleavened bread end on the 21st day of the first month, as it says in Leviticus, I'm going to make an assumption, probably he's going to leave the next day. That's what I'm thinking. Okay, 22nd, okay? Now, maybe he left 10 days later. I mean, it doesn't say that. It just says he left after unleavened bread. So I'm assuming that's the 22nd, okay?
Okay.
Now, if you add 5 days, because it says in 5 days, he joined the McGraw-Hills. Now, I know, just on a historical note, the scholars that do all these maps of the New Testament stuff, they say it takes about 2 to 3 days maximum to go in a sailboat from where he was across that strait, that waterway. Okay, mm-hmm. About 2 days, mm-hmm. maybe three. So let's just give him the benefit of the doubt because he's still got to get on horseback and wagons and get over to where they're going. But mm-hmm. it's 5 days. Just add 5 days to the 22nd, include the 22nd, and bring 5 days. And where does that bring you? Add it up.
Well, 22 and 5, we're on the 27th day or the 28th day?
26. 22, 23, 24, 25.
Oh, that's right.
26.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
Because I got to count the day.
Now,
yeah. Duh.
That's right. Now, the 26th day of the first month in the text of the Tzedok, the Zadok line, that's very significant. That's extremely significant.
Okay.
Because the 26th is the day that the Zadok priest said was the first day of the Omer count. That's when you begin counting the Omer, on the 26th. They wrote that. Okay?
Wow.
You follow me?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Paul obviously is going to join these guys in Troas 5 days later after unleavened bread. That's going to put him there at the 26th. That's the day when you wave the Omer. That's uh-huh. it. That's on the Zadok line, that's it. That's it. Okay?
Okay.
Now.
Wow.
Add now it says, but wait a minute, they stayed there and then they stayed 7 days, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so add 7 days now, not because the 26th, by the way, is a Sun. It's the first day of the week. It's what we would call a Sunday.
Okay.
It's always that way in the Tzedok line. So now you're going to add 7 more days. So we go Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbat. Now you're going to go 7 more days.
Yes.
That is going to bring you. That seventh day, that will bring you, when you calculate, when you look at it, to the second day of the second month in the Hebrew calendar.
Okay.
Second day, second month. Because on the Zadok line, there's only 30 days in a month, period.
Sure.
So that's going to bring him now to a Shabbat.
Uh-huh.
Now, that Shabbat on the Zadok line is always going to be, and I say always, will uh-huh. always be the first Sabbath of 7 in the counting of the 7 Sabbaths ending with Pentecost. It will always yeah. be that way. Second day, second month. That's the first count. That's the first Sabbath of it.
Wow.
So I can see that Paul gets there and he stays there through the first Shabbat of the 7 in the counting of the Omer based on Leviticus 23, verse 15. Leviticus 23, verse 15. You can read it if you want. Just go there and look. It's right there. Okay?
So you want me to read chapter 20, 13 through 15?
No. If you want to go to Leviticus 23.
Oh, sorry.
Verse 15. Just verse 15.
Hold on a minute. You're getting me too excited here, Avi. So,
Well, yeah. Look, guys, this is very difficult to do here on on a radio program. But
no,
when we're looking through, this would be much easier to just do
it's
it
okay.
live in person. But
it's okay. Everyone gets to hear the pages turning. It's good.
Yeah.
So okay. I'm in.
All right.
The Book of Leviticus, chapter 23, and I'm going to be reading verses 15 and 16. You shall also count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day when you brought in the sheaf of the wave offering. There shall be 7 complete Sabbaths. You shall count 50 days to the day after the 7th Sabbath. Then you shall present a new grain offering to Yahweh.
Okay. Now that will be Pentecost. Okay.
Yes.
So we know, based on that, we know that Paul gets to Troas 5 days after he leaves from after the days of unleavened bread. It says 5 days.
Uh-huh.
That puts us in on the 26th. 26th day, they do the wave offering in Troas. They must have, because obviously it's 5 days later. And then you add 7 days to that, and that's going to be the first weekly Sabbaths, okay?
Uh-huh.
So it's going to fulfill 50 days to Pentecost, will include the 26th, when he got there, okay?
Uh-huh.
But it's also going to include seven Sabbaths from the next 7 days when he was there at the end of the 7 days. That's that first Sabbath he's also called. He's doing a Zadok line there. That's what he's doing, a Zadok calendar right there. Now, wait a minute, we're not done here. Now, go to chapter 20. Now go to verse 7. Go to the next verse and watch what he says there.
Okay, so I'm in Acts or Leviticus?
Oh, you're in Acts. I'm sorry.
Okay, chapter 20, verse 7. And on the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, Paul began talking to them, intending to depart the next day, and he prolonged his message until midnight.
Okay, look at this. This is so amazing. Okay, now in the Greek text, it says on the first of the weeks, plural.
Yes.
So this is the first of the seven Sabbaths. This is weeks. No, the first of the seven Sabbaths. There's seven of them to Pentecost. So here he gets there and he's celebrating with them the first of the seven Sabbaths on his Shabbat right there, as is they're going to break bread. And they're going to depart the next day. Well, what's the next day? It's not going to be at sunset. It's not going to be when the sun goes down. No. No, the next day is when the sunrise comes up on the next morning. But he says that while he's there, he's speaking to them until midnight, obviously, midnight. So he's there on a Shabbat all the way till midnight, and the midnight hour is called Sabbath. That tells me. That tells me that sunrise is when the day begins. It's the new day at sunrise.
Okay.
And that is the morning. That it was at midnight, mind you, when this guy falls out of the window and dies and he gets resurrected.
Wow.
Well, looky here. That is a model of what happened with Yeshua when he raised at about the same time on a Sabbath during that nighttime portion. This guy is getting resurrected on the metaphor of Yeshua's resurrection. It's a very similar story. That's all I'm getting at. Okay.
Yeah, because in the early morning hours after the sun had come up, they're going to the tomb and he's no longer there. He's already left.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. You know? That's right. That's another matter. But the point that I'm bringing out here is that when the guy falls out of the window, this is still the first of the seven Sabbaths at about midnight when he's giving them a long-winded message and they're all falling asleep.
Wow.
So, but it's at nighttime. So this is a Zadok line calendar. That's what I'm getting at. This is not Pharisaic, not in the least. No way. This is Zadok right here.
Man, Avi, I thought you were going to be teaching us Hebrew, and instead you're trying to teach me math. I guess.
I'm sorry about that, pal. That's the way it goes. Yeah.
I failed math. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I didn't do so well myself, but all the other people out there probably. Okay. Now, what we could do is we could take now. That's Paul, but I want to go back to Yeshua. Okay, because Paul is Paul. Okay, but let's go look at. We can go look at Yeshua. Okay.
Okay.
If you want.
I do. Yeah.
Oh, all right. All right.
I do.
Now, what I want to do is I want to take us. Do we have a moment here to do this? I don't know if we do or not.
Whoa, time is going by so quick, Abby. I can't believe
it. Terrible.
Okay,
it's terrible. I know.
So we're at 8:56. We got about a minute and a half before our break. So
okay, I got to be quick here. Okay, let's go over here to Matthew. Matthew chapter 16, verse 1.
Okay. Whoops. Hang on tight. We'll be right back.
Okay. All right.
What's a Hebrew? The modern-day connotation of a Hebrew is that Hebrews are Jewish. But as can be found in Genesis 14:13, Abram is called Hebrew and becomes Abraham, a father of many nations and believers in a living God. The term Hebrew takes on a meaning of crossing over, which exemplified Abram's life journey. He was a person who crossed over to seek God with all his might, leaving the ways of an idol-worshipping culture. From our perspective, Hebrews are people who choose to leave the culture of idol worship in order to seek truth. They choose to seek God's instructions and to believe in His promises. They seek the kingdom of Elohim, Yahweh, God. They are people who are learning to trust, believe, and to hope. Welcome to Hebrew Nation, His kingdom, His people, His promise.
And welcome back to your Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where Hebrews from all over the world gather to share and listen about the biblical roots of our faith. Sit back with your favorite morning brew and join the conversation. Lines are now open, so call 503-967-3001. 503-967-3001. His kingdom, His people, and your radio station.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the Hebrew. Whoa, you got to make sure we're on.
Whoops, hang on.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show.
That's a little better.
Yeah, Roland got so excited he forgot to turn on the little buttons, right? I was going, we got to get back to this topic. You know, he left me hanging.
Boy, did we ever realize.
We're in the middle of a story and it went away. Okay, guys, we are talking about what is the Zanuck calendar? Where does it come from? What got Avi Ben Mordecai reaching this thing and even researching it? What got us talking about it today? And we were looking at the Old Testament and the writings and where the priesthood came from, what their purpose was. We started to also now discover, did Paul keep it or how did he keep it? We had a little bit of math going on in the book of Acts for us, and now we're finding out what did Yeshua do, and we're into the book of Matthew and try to find that out.
Yep.
And we just want to, again, stress to everyone here is that, and I know Avi's heart, and that is we're not trying to get on a pedestal and yell at you and saying I'm right and you're wrong. We're showing you information that has come to light, and it's highly interesting, and I think we should all try to strive to do our best to be a good Berean and study some of this stuff out. And I think it's really interesting. So, Avi, we're in the book of Matthew, and I think you led us to chapter 16. Is that correct?
That is correct. We're in Matthew 16, verses 1 through 4, I think. And I would like to show, again, just the principle of what Yeshua was doing or what he was saying, because he's obviously got a connection here to this whole Tzedok line of this reckoning, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And again, I want to stress before we go any further, we are basing all of this on this passage, this prophetic word comes from Ezekiel chapter 44. And if you look at verses 23 through 24, you read it yourself.
Yes.
Where it says the sons of Tzedok, they have been given the rightful priestly authority to do everything, to judge, to teach, and to set the calendar timings of all of the Moedim. It was their job.
Mm-hmm.
So you read it yourself. That's
I
what
did.
It says.
It was amazing.
Now I'm not going to argue with Jehovah. If everybody wants to argue and say, no, but the Pharisees have it, the rabbis have it, the Talmud has it, well, that's your problem. I mean, I'm not doing that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna stick with what Yah says. That's what he said, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so whether somebody wants to argue whether the Dead Sea Scrolls are infallible or not infallible. That's not even in my thinking. I don't care whether how anybody looks at that. The fact is, I just want to know, what did Yeshua do? Period. It's nothing more than that. Okay.
Right.
So now what we're looking at here, let's go to Matthew 16. Go ahead and read that. And I'm following along with you in the New King James Version. Okay.
And you're wanting verses what?
Just you can start with verse 1, go to verse 4, and I want to show you something. Yeah.
And the Pharisees and the Sadducees came up and, testing him, Yeshua, asked him to show them a sign from heaven.
I love that verse. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will not detour, I promise, Avi. Oh, okay. But verse 2. But he answered and said to them, when it is evening, you say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning, there will be a storm today, for the sky is red and threatening. Do you know how to discern the appearance of the sky, but cannot discern the signs of the times? An adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and a sign will not be given it, except the sign of Jonah. And he left them and went away.
Okay, now, I know we could really go off on this one for a long time, but let's just get to the heart of this whole matter here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we say here in verse 3, Yeshua is, if I understand him correctly, he's saying, okay, you guys are looking at the sky, you know, red sky at night, sailors
delight,
I think. And red sky in the morning, sailors take warning. You've heard that, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So he says to the Pharisees and to the religious leaders, you guys know how to look at the sky and you're doing okay. I mean, you get the concept, okay? But then notice his last statement. He says, but you cannot, you don't understand, you're not grabbing the concept of, look what he says here, the signs of the times.
Yes, that caught my attention.
Now, we normally, in our Western culture, we're normally going to understand the signs of the times as being how do we put it, guys? Like, oh, you know, you don't get the sign, you don't get the times yet. The times are really rough. How do you say that? How do you call that in English? Just like a signs of the times. Oh boy, this is really a bad time right now. That type of thing.
The handwriting on the wall.
Right. Yeah.
That kind of idea.
Okay.
But
which is another biblical term, actually.
you guys, it is correct, yeah. But this is not what this is referring to. We have to go back to his understanding. What would he say when he said signs of the times? What did he mean by that? Okay? Now, I was going to the Dead Sea Scrolls, and I was looking, and for those of your listeners that would care to make any kind of a note, if you go over to the one document of many, it's called the Damascus Document, 4Q271. That's 4Q, like K4 of Qumran. Okay, this is going to be number two. It's number 271. It's fragment 4, column 2, line 5. And there's a bunch of stuff there. There's going to be a statement that's being made in the context. And the statement is essentially, Al Sefer Machlakot Ha'itim Le'Yovalim U'Shavototeim. Okay, Techem. So, I'm sorry. Let me put it in English. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. It's saying, on the scroll or the book of the divisions of the times and of in their Shavuot, their weeks. This is a reference to the scroll of the divisions of the times. This is mentioned in the book of Jubilees. It's also mentioned in Yeshua's day. They understood this statement, the signs of the times, as referring to the times of the...
Oh, man. Right in the middle, right again.
Okay, hang on.
Oh.
See if we can bring him back.
That sounded like he popped back in there, but might just be another one of those electronic ghost sounds that happen on occasion.
You know, as I'm getting him back on, again, I want to remind people of our conversations. And some of you might be going, well, there he goes again. He's going ahead and talk about books outside of Scripture. But remember, Scripture, many times, and we've all chimed in on this idea, that there are witnesses for something that's written. And those of you who have understood the Dead Sea Scrolls understand that most people have used the Dead Sea Scrolls not as the authority, but as a witness to the authority. And most of the scholars that I know that have looked this up are all in that same understanding. And so we're going to be seeing if we can bring him back onto this call.
There we go.
Right all in the middle of the story again, Avi. Unbelievable.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
So here, that's okay. Yeah, look, there's a lot of forces that are against us always here. But So it says here, this is about the signs of the times. This is a very specific reference to what the sons of Tzedok wrote about in their writings. It's mentioned in the Temple Scroll. It's mentioned in the Damascus Document. It's mentioned in 4Q384, what's called the Apocryphum of Jeremiah. It's all of these references and many more. It talks about the divisions of the...
Unbelievable.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Oh.
Are you back on?
Wow, again. Yeah, gotta love technology, especially when it, you know, works against you.
That's right, yeah. See if we can pick him back up.
We're talking about divisions.
Go ahead, Avi.
Yeah. So it's the signs, it's the divisions and signs of the times. This is all referenced in the Dead Sea Scrolls penned by the sons of Tzedok. So when Yeshua says, you Pharisees, you guys don't understand what's going on this. Oh, yeah, you can look at the signs of the sky, but you can't see the divisions of the times. So he's referring very specifically to those time frames involving the sons of Tzedok and the Zadok reckoning calendar. They don't see it. They don't want to see it. And here he's referencing it very specifically. Okay, So I'm looking at this. I'm saying, what else? How am I going to look at this? You give me a better idea, because I can see it right in the text.
Sorry, I missed you. You said give Avi what?
Are you talking to me or you? Oh yeah, okay.
Yes.
What I was saying is. Go ahead.
I thought you were trying to clarify. You were wanting us to respond to you in what way? I just missed that sentence.
Oh, no. What I was saying is Yeshua is calling these religious leaders. He's saying you're hypocrites.
Yes.
He says, because, you know, you can look at the signs of the heavens in the red sky at night, red sky in the morning. You can see that stuff fine. Mm-hmm. But what you don't see is the divisions and signs of the Zadok calendar reckoning. You're not seeing that. And so he's bringing them to that and saying that is the correct time. That's the correct divisions of the times. And when you know those divisions and you know how that calculation is all done, that just makes perfect sense in line of everything else that he's talking about here. Totally. Okay.
Are you wanting to go further with that, or can I interject a question here that I think is appropriate?
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
Okay.
100%. Ask anything you want. Yeah.
So one of the questions that have come up, and that is many times when people hear you speak, and in actuality, you've actually covered this at the start of the show, but what is allowing you to be the private interpreter of this particular text? Now, I know my gut reaction to this question is pretty straightforward, because many times people hear someone talk about something And they go, yeah, but the glory of the Sanhedrin or the glory of large groups is they've come to a consensus of what they should follow and what they shouldn't follow. And whenever there's something new that comes up, those are all brought about by private interpretation. And we get even a quote of 2 Peter 1:20, which refers to that, that no one should interpret Scripture on their own. What's your gut reaction to that when you read that? But mine is that you've already brought up the idea of Michael Heiser, who's done a lot of study in this area. We're also using the witnesses of other historical texts as well as biblical texts.
Of course.
And we're not trying to interpret this on our own. You're actually using Bible verses and those sorts of things.
Well, look, my approach is very simple, and I'm going to say to somebody who says, well, this is your interpretation, and I'll say, okay, give me a better one then, please. I'm all ears. In other words, if signs of the times, if signs of the times is referring to here, it's a very specific reference. It's a very specific phrase that appears in the scrolls that are found in the Dead Sea in the Qumran. So I'm going to say, well, give me a better explanation then. I mean, that's a clear reference. I mean, okay. Tell me, give me a better idea. I'd like to hear it. Do you follow what I'm saying, guys?
Oh yeah, no, that's really understandable, you know, and I appreciate that.
But people would look. People will say whatever they want to say. I'm not here with an agenda, trying to say, oh, you had better believe this or else. I'm just simply saying, if we want to understand Yeshua, his death, his burial, his resurrection, his ascension, his second coming.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to know all of that stuff, I'm saying go check out the Tzaddik or Tzedok calendar reckoning system. Go look at that and match it with that, because if everybody wants to do the Pharisaic Talmudic calendar, I'm not going to stop you. If you want to do it, do it. But I'm saying, why don't you check this one out and have a look at there and compare it and tell me what you think? Because I'm already been down this path already, and I'm telling you, I don't have any other answers. I'm saying it looks like it's a Tzaddik calendar to me, and I'm not some great scholar sitting in some ivory tower. I'm just looking at this text and I'm going, show me a better option. I don't know. I don't see anything else.
So let me ask you this next question, I think, which might fit in appropriately here at the moment. What would cause us to automatically think that the Jews are wrong? And again, I have a hard time with this label of Jews, because if I look at Jews, we have the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Essenes, and even out of those groups, we have different belief systems. So it's really hard to narrow this down. But maybe we should say, what would cause Halal or the Sanhedrin or the council to be wrong about observances? Why shouldn't we just follow them?
Okay, again, we're gonna have to go back to Ezekiel 44:23-24. Go ahead and read it again, because I'm not just cherry picking some verse out of the Tanakh and say, oh, that's got to be it. I'm looking at context.
Yes.
And this is Yah's word. So go back and read that again. Go back and read verses 23-24 of Ezekiel. Let's get a regroup and take a look again. Why are we doing what we're doing? What are we looking at here? I want to go look there. That's important.
Okay, so we're back at Ezekiel 44. We're going to start with verse 15, because I think that sets everything up. But the Levitical priests, the sons of Zadok, who kept charges of my sanctuary when the sons of Israel went astray from me. So I come near to me to minister to me, and they shall stand before me to offer me the fat and the blood, declares the Yahweh. And that right there, you guys, that's the priesthood ministry. They minister to Yahweh. And so now if I go back down to verses 23 and 24.
Yeah.
Okay. Moreover, they shall teach my people the difference between the holy and the profane, and cause them to discern between the unclean and the clean. And in dispute they shall take their stand to judge. They shall judge as according to my ordinances. They shall also keep my laws and my statutes and all my appointed feasts and sanctify my Sabbaths. So the Pharisees, the Sadducees, usurped this authority by making the Sanhedrin. Is that correct?
That's what history shows us from the book of Maccabees and from Josephus and a number of other writings. Absolutely. Yes. They usurped it. They did a political and religious coup about 175 years, roughly, before Yeshua.
Mm-hmm. And so rather than being offended by that, I think we should probably be okay with that, I would think.
Well, I mean, it's what, look, it, we know, you know, what was it, Winston Churchill, and there were him and there were a number of other people who came up with this, basically this idea of the victors in a conflict write the history.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could say the winners of a conflict are going to influence the history that is written down line.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense. Everybody think about it logically. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the losers aren't going to write. They're not going to write the history. The winners are.
We won.
So the point is that if the Pharisees were the prevailing party of religious thought and teaching, and they even had power over the Sadducees, which was another group, an offset group of Herod's people, okay,
yes.
Not of Zadok. It sounds very similar in spelling, but it's not the same people, okay?
Yes.
And they were all the winners in the conflicts, okay? So they're the ones writing the history. So naturally, when we get down line to our time, well, who are we following? We're going to follow the history as it's been given to us from them.
Yeah.
And that's what you have today. And that's rabbinic Judaism, of which Messianism today is an offshoot of that, but only with the added teaching of Yeshua, the Messiah. But it's still the basic, same basic thing.
Yeah.
That's my point, what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, let me and tell me if I'm wrong on this, but when I study the history of these three groups, the reasons why the Essenes moved out, from my historical understanding, is that they didn't want to handle the Pharisees, who were doing the will of the people, or so-called, quote, the will of people, and the Sadducees, who's doing the will of the government, both of which were entangled with governmental systems.
Okay. I gotta stop you here for a minute. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I gotta interrupt you. Now look, you have mentioned already several times already this idea, the Essenes. Okay.
Yes.
Now this is really important.
I just
really gotta interrupt you here.
Good.
Professor Dr. Rachel Elior at Hebrew University, one of the leading academics and experts in the Dead Sea Scrolls to this very day, she is very, very clear that the term Essoi or Essene does not exist in the Dead Sea Scrolls anywhere. It's not there.
That's what I'm getting to. Yes.
Okay? It's not there. And Josephus, and then there's a Roman writer. They're the only ones that mention this thing about the Essenes.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, who are these Essenes? No
yes.
one knows exactly. No one knows.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's being debated. It's being discussed in many, many different theological schools. People are looking at it. But no one knows precisely who they were. And it's possible they were connected to the Qumran. It's possible. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
We do know that the sons of Tzedok are a scriptural body of believers, but they came to be believers later on in Yeshua, because they died off entirely after about the Second Temple's destruction. So we know that they came to be believers, mm-hmm. but initially they were looking for the redemption, for the coming of Messiah.
Yes.
And that is found in their writings. Like
yes.
in the scroll of Gabriel and in the Damascus document and in the temple scroll, we know they were looking for Messiah.
Uh-huh.
So the point is that We have to stop using this term Essene until we have a much better clarification of exactly who they were. We can make some assumptions. We can make some speculation, but that's about as far as I'm going to go with it. We have to say this is Qumran.
Yeah, when I was reading about it, you're absolutely right. It's unclear what they actually were doing. The only clarity that they had is that there was a group of people who said, we've had enough of the Pharisees and Sadducees, and we're leaving town. I mean, so that's exactly. that's the only clarity that I actually got. you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So I thought that was rather humorous.
Yeah. But so this is the point.
Hang on. We're going to be right back.
Make a joyful noise to Yahweh, all the earth. Burst out and sing for joy. Yes, sing praises. Sing praises to Yahweh with the harp and the voice of melody. With shofars and sound of the ram's horn, make a joyful noise before the King, Yahweh. Let the sea roar with its fullness, the world and those who dwell therein. Let the rivers clap their hands. Let the mountains sing for joy together. Let them sing before Yahweh, for he comes to judge the earth. He will judge the world with righteousness and the peoples with equity. End of Psalms 98. This has been a Manna Minute.
You're listening to Hebrew Nation Radio, a division of Torah to the nations.
Avi Ben Mordecai, and I'll tell you what, this time has been flying. I mean, just flying. Every time we get to a good spot, we're going, uh-oh, it's a break.
Yeah.
You know, but anyways, we have another question here. Go ahead.
I can't remember the last time we did 2 hours straight through. That was a long time ago.
Yeah. A long time ago. Well, you know, one of the questions that have come to us, and it seems to be one of these really divisive questions, not that calendars aren't divisive already, but.
Oh, boy. Really?
But the one question that seems to constantly come up is, okay, what about this Passover? And Yeshua has the Passover. And there's this always question about the 14th day, the 16th day within the calendar system. What did Yeshua actually do? We know that there's some differences within the gospel. And last time we had you on, we actually talked about, you know, the Thursday and the Friday and the Saturday and the Sunday and all those times and even the Tuesday and Wednesday. Yeah. But maybe you can do a brief summary of what we've done before and just touch on that for us.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that, and this is really some very beautiful narratives that help us to understand this, and I invite every one of your listeners to really open up their Bible and take a look, because it's very telling. Okay, now go over here to Mark chapter 14, verse 12. This is a really powerful statement, and it's also echoed in a couple of the other gospel narratives as well.
Okay. Mark 14, verse 12. And on the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, when the Passover lamb was being sacrificed, his disciples said to him, "Where do you want us to go and prepare for you to eat the Passover?"
Okay, now go to verse 16. So 14, 16.
And the disciples went out and came to the city and found it just as he had told them, and they prepared the Passover.
Okay. So a couple things here. First of all, Yeshua supposedly, well, I'm not going to say supposedly, I know definitely. Yeshua was our Passover lamb. That's the whole metaphor.
Okay? Yes.
Now, let's take a look at verse 12 again. And
well,
if, in fact, he is the Passover lamb, then we're going to make the assumption, or at least based on Scripture, we're going to say categorically that it, this had to be done on the 14th.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because
the question is, what?
Well, there's a real problem with this verse. Because it says, and on the first day of the Feast of the Unleavened Bread, when the Passover lamb was being sacrificed, his disciples say to him, where do you want us to go and prepare for you to eat the Passover? How does those two correlate?
Oh, boy, boy, boy. Okay, so we're looking in English. This is, remember, every translation team, unfortunately, because we are human beings, there is going to be a bias, a theological bias. There will be.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have to kind of prayerfully muddle our way through this and try to understand what's going on. Now, this narrative is echoed in Matthew chapter 26, verses 17 through 19.
Okay.
And it's also echoed again in Luke 22, 7 through 13. All of this stuff is being echoed in the same way, okay?
Okay.
The word first, the word day, as we understand the term day, it does not exist in the Greek text. It's not there.
Wow.
It's supplied by the translators.
So what would replace that, or was it replaced?
It's not going to.
Okay.
So then the term, the first, the word first, that needs to be understood based on Greek. It's in a sequence of plural terms or plural actions. This is a first. We go in the first of something. So there means there's going to be a sequence of some other things that are going to happen as a result of that afterwards. This is number one in a sequence, okay?
Okay.
So this is telling us on the first or the number one of unleaveneds, plural. I don't know how to put it in English, but that's what it says. Number one of the unleaveneds or on the matzahs, okay? Yeah. Number one of the matzahs. That would be a best way to put it if we're going to put it into Hebrew thought, okay?
Okay.
Now, what, based on Hebrew scripture, based on the Exodus story in Exodus 12, you'd have to ask the question, what is the first of all of the unleavens or the matzahs? There's a head, there's a number one event that takes place with the lamb when you slaughter it and you eat it. You must eat it with unleavened bread.
Yes.
That's the law.
Yes.
That's what this is referring to. It's not the first day of unleavened bread. It's the first of the unleaveneds, plural.
Wow. I'm trying to wrap my mind around that and how to think about that.
Well, it's just the way we talk in English. It doesn't make sense in English. But in the Hebrew, it's going to make a lot of sense. Okay? This is number one of the series of eating unleavened bread. This is the first time you do it, is what it's saying. And that's going to be with the lamb, always with the lamb.
Wow.
Then it says they killed or slaughtered the Passover. Well, they did. Of course they did.
Mm-hmm.
And that is called Preparation Day.
Mm-hmm.
Preparation Day in Hebrew scripture is always the day when you slaughter the lamb. It's not about setting the table, putting the salt on there, putting the salt water in the table and the settings and the plates. That's not what preparation means. It means you slaughter the lamb. That's a Hebrew idea.
Wow.
So they're clearly doing a Passover in this verse, very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. You come up with a better solution. That's what it says to me.
So on the, if I'm looking at this, I would probably read it like, and on the first part of the Feast of Unleavened.
Yeah.
Or the,
you can
okay.
Do that. Why not? Sure. Sure.
How do you want us
and then
to prepare?
Where do you want us to go to do this? I mean, obviously the Sadducees had control of the temple, and the Pharisees, they're not going to do it on that day. They're not going to do it. How are they going to do it? They're running the temple. So they're going to do it in a different area. And it's my assumption. This is my speculation.
Uh-huh.
They're going to do it in what we would probably call the Essene Quarter or the Qumran Quarter of the Old City.
Uh-huh.
That's where they were going to do it, uh-huh. in my view. I mean, that doesn't make me right. It just means that's what I'm seeing. Now, let's go on and let's ask the question. If Yeshua has to be the Passover lamb, how can he eat the Passover on the 14th and die on the 14th? Makes
uh-huh.
no sense to me.
Right.
It really doesn't make any sense to me. How is he going to eat it and die on it on the same day?
Interesting.
So that's going to present a problem in the gospel narratives. Go ahead.
I was just going to say there's just too much story in between those two moments.
Yes.
There's not enough time in the day to have all of the other story that we know happens after the Passover and the actual crucifixion.
And it unfolds. That's a good
Correct.
Way to put it.
Yeah.
Correct. So what I found, and now if you apply the Zadok or the priest of Tzedok, if you apply that calendar reckoning to what's going on in those verses as they are echoed in those gospel narratives, if you apply the Tzedok calendar reckoning to that, it's just going to make perfect sense. 100%. There won't be any confusion. I know, not to me, there wasn't. Okay. So what happens is you'll notice he's going to eat the Passover with them on the 14th, which he did.
Okay.
Now, and that's according to Exodus chapter 12. Exodus 12, right.
Okay.
Now, what I found is that in the Gospel of John, if you're going to go over to the Gospel of John,
okay, I'll do it.
You go to, I think it's going to be, is it chapter, I think it's chapter 18, okay? Or
okay.
thereabouts. Okay, hang on here.
I have Jesus arrested in chapter 18.
Yeah, he's going doing that, right? And then you come over here to chapter 18 and go over to chapter 19, right? I'm sorry. Go to chapter 19 of Gospel of John and go to verse 14.
Okay, I'll do it. Now,
19:14.
Now it was the day of preparation for the Passover. It was about the sixth hour, and he said to the Jews, "Behold, your king." And this is Pilate talking.
Right, and then you can read the rest of that story where they crucify him on that day.
Yeah, they yell out, "Crucify,
now,
crucify."
Now wait a minute. How is that possible? He eats the Passover with his disciples on the 14th, but here it's the preparation day, the slaughter day of the Passover of the lamb, and it's about the sixth hour, what they would call the sixth hour, when he says, "We're going to crucify him here." That mm-hmm. makes no sense. But if you apply the Zadok calendar, you'll notice something very interesting, because the Zadok calendar has the Passover falling 2 days before this event in John 19:14.
Okay.
In other words, there's 2 day difference. So Yeshua does the Passover with his disciples by the book of Exodus, chapter 12. He does it on what we would call a Tuesday night.
Uh-huh.
And this gets a little, this is what I'm going into in my gospel, in my podcast series. So he does the Passover with his disciples on what we would call Tuesday under the cover of darkness.
Uh-huh.
But 2 days later, which is now going to be what we would call a Thursday in our culture,
uh-huh.
that's when John 19:14 is taking place.
Uh-huh.
It's two full days later. Now they're going to do their preparation day on the fifth day of the week, and they're going to crucify him on that very day. Now, what I found interesting is that there's a whole series of events that are taking place between what we would call that Tuesday, the Passover of Yeshua's, and the crucifixion when the Pharisees did it on the Thursday with him. There's Tuesday, you have all night, all day Wednesday, and all day Thursday. There's two full days that you have to fill in with a bunch of events.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting that I know in Jewish law, this is Jewish law now, okay?
Uh-huh.
Yeshua had that the Jewish law states very clearly in Mishnah, Sanhedrin, chapter 10.
Uh-huh.
It's right there. Mishnah, Sanhedrin, chapter 10. That that if there is a capital case brought before the authorities in Jerusalem, you cannot confirm a capital case on the same day. You cannot do it. Now, if these guys were being really particularly nasty about things, I think the gospel narratives would have told us that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't say it. So it's telling me that there were two, that there was a second day. So Pilate interviews Yeshua twice in two different days. He does it on a Wednesday morning, and then he does it on a Thursday morning. It's the Wednesday morning when Yeshua gets brought before all the people, the religious leaders, and then they hold on to him. And then on Thursday morning, they bring him again to Pilate, and that's when he gets crucified on that day.
Yeah, I'm looking at the context of this again, and again, tell me if I'm wrong, but later here in chapter 19, it seems that the writer is expressing that there's a preparation done, held by the Pharisees and the government, and then and then the preparation day that they were following when they asked Yeshua, "What do you want us to prepare?" There seems to be two distinct pictures.
So they were dealing with the calendar issue.
Yeah,
that's right. And there were two full days of differences between the Zadok calendar on Passover on a Tuesday and the Pharisaic calendar on a Thursday. 2 days. That's the point that I'm making. Go ahead.
No, that goes back to what Aaron was talking about, all that fill in on the story of what's what's actually going on with
so
the court.
So that brings us to a very, very interesting question. So that tells us, okay, wait a minute. If there are 2 days of differences here in the story, and let's say that Yeshua is eating the Passover according to the Exodus story, chapter 12.
Mm-hmm.
He's eating it by Zadok reckoning, exactly according to the Torah. Then that means that he gets crucified on the 16th, not the 14th, because he's on Zadok calendar. But if he's on the Pharisaic calendar, then yes, he was crucified on the 14th. Does that make sense?
Wow. Then we'd have a long period of time. So if he's crucified.
Yeah, but am I making sense of what I'm saying?
Yes.
That if he's eating the Passover on the 14th with his disciples, then clearly 2 days later, he's dying on the 16th, not the 14th. But it's the 14th on their calendar, not on the disciples' calendar.
Interesting. That makes a whole lot of sense. Yeah.
Wait. But now you're going to have your people saying, wait a minute, time out. Hold on. I thought he was the Passover lamb.
Yes.
And I'm saying he was. And that's where we have to go, to 2 Chronicles chapter 29. You must go there.
Okay.
Here's a question for you, Ali. I'm just listening to you guys rehash this. Is it possible that there were simultaneously going on two or three different calendars? Yeshua is properly going through the Zadok calendar, and the Pharisees and the Sadducees and all the Jews were going upon their own calendar. And that's why you have the difference of days.
That's what we're saying, yeah.
Precisely. That's exactly the point that I'm making.
Okay, you got 5 minutes, Avi, and I'm going to 2 Chronicles 29.
Yeah, we have to hurry up on this one, yeah.
Okay.
And we're gonna be done.
2 Chronicles 29.
So now we go to 2. Okay, we're going to go to 2 Chronicles 29, and we're going to go over here. Hang on here. We're going to go over here. This is a context. Hang on here. I'm looking here. Okay. And Hezekiah, he tells all of the priests of his day who are of the house of Zadok, because he says so over here in chapter 29. He says, begin reading at verse 4.
Okay.
2 Chronicles 29, 4.
And he, Hezekiah, brought in the priests and the Levites and gathered them into the square on the east. Then he said to them, listen to me, O Levites. Consecrate yourselves now and consecrate the house of the Lord, the God of your fathers, and carry the uncleanliness out from the holy place.
Okay, so we know historically that the temple had been completely rubbish, trash. It was spiritual idolatry and trash was just littering the temple.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to reinstate the Passover here in this section, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you follow down to the text, you're going to see, go to verse 15, 29, okay. Verse 15.
And they assembled their brothers, consecrated themselves, and went in to clean the house of Yahweh according to the commandments of the king by the words of the Lord.
Yeah, to do what?
So the priests went in to the inner part of the house of the Lord to cleanse it, and every unclean thing which they had found in the temple of the Lord they brought out to the court of the house of the Lord. Then the Levites received it to carry it out to the Kidron Valley. Oh, my God.
Okay,
Lord.
So they went to go cleanse. They went to go purify, in Hebrew, tahor. They went to go cleanse or purify the house of Yah. That's what it says, okay?
Yes.
Now look at verse 17. It's going to give us a time stamp. When did it happen?
Uh-oh. Now they begin the consecration on the first day of the first month, and on the eighth day of the month, they entered the porch of the Lord. Then they consecrated the house of the Lord in 8 days and finished on the 16th day of the first month.
Ah, interesting. The first day of the first month, that's the first, wait a minute, the 14th day of the first month is Passover.
Yes.
This is the first day of the first month.
Mm-hmm.
And it says on the eighth day of the month, it says what happened in 8 days. 8 days they completed the cleansing, right?
Yes.
Well, what day did they finish? So 8 days later, it says that that's called the 16th of the first month. That's when they finished.
Oh, my word. It is
now, finished. Wait. But it says they finished, right? Doesn't it say that there?
Yes.
Okay, what did Yeshua say when he was hanging on the cross?
It is finished.
What did he say?
It is finished.
Bingo. You got it. That's what he's doing. He's cleansing all of the spiritual trash of the 14th on the Pharisee calendar.
Oh,
and he's
word.
Saying, clean it up. We're done with this.
Oh, my word.
And it happened on the 16th.
That gives me goosebumps. Shoot.
All by accident.
I didn't, you've shown me this text before, but this made more clarity this time around. And it makes a whole lot more sense. You're getting better at the money note, Avi. I like this.
Oh. I'm saying Yeshua said it's finished. What did he was finished what? That was it. He was taking the 14th. No. He was taking the calendar, the whole Pharisaic. He was taking that thing down. He says, it's going with me into death. I'm done. This is out of here. The religious coup is over. That's what he was saying.
Wow. Okay, Avi, I have 1 minute. Okay, how can people listen to your podcast, please?
Just go to my website. It's cominghome.co.il/podcast. You can just catch it right there. Cominghome.co.il/podcast.
Wow. And
Boy, I just really love talking with you here today. Thank you for delving into this a little bit more specifically. Any questions can be forwarded to you, yes?
Yeah, no, yes, they can. Now, can I say something real quick here?
Because
I'm just going to leave you on a cliffhanger on this one,
uh-oh.
Okay? Because I've been looking at the when will the second coming and all that, when will that happen? That's what I've been asking myself the question. It's got to be on the Zadok calendar. It's got to be. And I think I found a clue. Because I think it's going to be, and just for your listeners that know this, I think it's going to be on what's called the 33rd day of the Omer. In Hebrew, we call it Lag BaOmer. The 33rd day of the Omer, that I think is when it's going to be in the second Passover. It's a clue.
Hang on. Thank you. You won't be in time. Bye-bye. Thank you, Avi.
Okay.
His light now shines, the darkness must flee from the light.